It's Siren Radio, and it's time for another Cultural Connections. And this edition of Cultural Connections will take us around the western part of the globe, certainly, specifically Miami. We've also got the return of our Nigerian expert Ola Ogunyemi with us, and of course John Rowlands makes his debut as well. All this on Cultural Connections. So let's jump straight into the team and Kathy Manso. Kathy, obviously a regular on the Midweek Drive Live, now a graduate, of course, of the University of Lincoln, and somebody who, for the graduation speech back in January, had the response, cracking, I believe, from the chairman of the Board of Governors.
Yes, all true, all accurate. No fake news here.
Share with us a little bit of your own background, Kathy, for those of us who aren't familiar with your journey from Miami through Australia, through South Africa, through Malta, and more.
I mean, you kind of summarized it. Yes, I'm originally from Miami, Florida, and I was there until 21, and then I lived in California for about a year or two. And I had a bunch of different jobs there, but I was starting off my journalism career there as a marine correspondent with a local newspaper. And then I thought I got a better job in Miami working with public radio, which I was very excited for. And then because of funding cuts, that got taken away. So I had to think, what am I going to do? What do I like? So I thought, travel. I like travel a lot. And I was pretty keen on education, so I became an English teacher, which is why I lived in all those places. So started in Malta, was supposed to be 6 months, turned out to be 2 years. Then I lived in South Africa. That was only for a few months, like five. And then I lived in Australia for almost a year. I finished 2 months before the year only because of the pandemic and went back. And then before you knew it, I thought, hey, I enjoyed travel. It's good to know, but let's try to pursue that real dream, which was journalism. And that's why I got my master's. And here we are today.
Excellent. And John Rowlands, welcome to your first Cultural Hello. Connections. The one thing, of course, about doing a search for you, John, is the first thing that crumps up is Warner Brothers Television Production UK biography, a whole range of things there. There are lots of John Rowlands out there.
Yes, you panicked me for a minute then. Yeah, there are a few. There's also a load of Johns, because I'm a H-less John, just J-O-N, and was quite upset to discover there's already a J-O-N John Rowlands out there. I thought, you know, that was my thing, not having a H, but there we go.
There's another John Rowlands who, for the British Comedy Guide, effectively is producer and executive producer from that point of view. And I suppose, actually, there's a connection between your work within the Lincoln School of Film, Media and Journalism and comedy, because let's face it, you need to have a sense of humour, I would have thought, John.
It's certainly yes. You've got to laugh, else yeah. It's quite interesting, really, because there's in my journey, if I can sort of maybe I can identify the correct John Rowlands in amongst all those entries that you found there. So out of university, I did some work for what was called a regional film development agency, working with short films from Lincolnshire and East Midlands filmmakers, trying to help get a bit more filmmaking happening in the area. So I had a lovely time there, and then sort of moved into teaching from that. I'd always enjoyed doing that sort of thing, and worked in FE for many years, as well as doing a bit here, and then ultimately found myself here at the University of Lincoln, back again, because I'm a local lad. It's been quite an interesting journey.
Fantastic. And I believe you were also connected with some of the early incarnations of Siren Radio, if memory serves.
Gosh, yes, going way back when, yes, yeah.
To very the 90s. Much
on the periphery, yes, but definitely, yes, before it had its own studios in this building. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very interesting.
We've also got, of course, the person who's executive producer of Cultural Connections. That's the fabulous Ola Ogunyemi. He's going to sit down and be by a microphone before too long. He's currently preparing for his research seminar as well. So it's all very exciting. And whilst we're getting that just sorted out, really, because it's a huge journey, obviously, to move from one end of the studio into the microphone area. And we don't want to have any shouting. That's not good at all. Kathy, your first choice of music is a curious this one by Bad Bunny.
Yeah, I did choose this one. I thought it was important because it was performed at the Grammys, which is a huge step in Latin culture. And it's a step further from reggaeton because it adds a little bit more of a classical element, more distinct to the area of like Latin Central America.
Tú dices que no me atrevo. Si supieras que yo ando a fuego. Dime que tú juegues y yo lo juego. No lo dejemos pa' luego, no. Que la lucha se fue. Y la noche llegó. Ay, quiero saber si usted. Dime pa' dónde vamos, después de la playa. Si no secamos, yo traigo la toalla y de nuevo nos mojamos. Pero en mi cama, te voy a dar tabla de selfiear, yeah. Dime pa' dónde vamos, después de la playa. Si no secamos, yo traigo la toalla y de nuevo nos mojamos. Pero en mi cama, te voy a dar tabla de selfiear, bebé. Dime, ¿vamos pa'l mambo o no vamos pa'l mambo? Tú me dices, mami. Zumba. ¿Qué? Hey, hey, hey. Hoy sí que sí. Hey. Dime pa' dónde vamos después de la playa. Si no secamos, yo traigo la toalla y de nuevo nos mojamos. Pero en mi cama te voy a dar tabla de selfiear, bebé. Mami, tú vives lejos. ¿Quién es? Que está cogiendo cerveza a neverita. ¿Tú, anda con nosotros? Ah, okay, dale.
Yes, I presume he's finished now. Okay, let's move on and back to John Rowland, School Director of Teaching and Learning at, of course, the University of Lincoln. Got to ask, John, is your Twitter handle at Rowlandium?
It is, yes. Yeah.
This is important.
Yes, a brief dalliance with being interested in semi-precious gemstones and things.
And I was thinking it was your sporadic writer of science fiction that actually appeals to me with respect to your Twitter handle there, which inevitably draws me like a magnet to the whole system of that. So science fiction, Lincolnshire, education, is it something you still have a passion for? Is it a case of no, I'm all about pedagogy these days?
Oh, no, very, very much still got my one of my sci-fi hats on yet. As I've worn for you today, Alex, my little Live Long and Prosper pride badge for the studio for today. One of my little flourishes. Yeah, very much so. Haven't had as much time for the writing in recent years as I would like, but still very much interested in that sort of thing. And yeah, any excuse to work it into the teaching. I was talking to the students about Cardassians from Star Trek only yesterday, so yes, any
always
excuse.
Important to stress that, because there are some students who would actually think, what's that reality TV program all about in terms of the Kims, etc. No, it's Kira Nerys, and she's a Bajoran, versus of course the Cardassians played by Andrew Robertson and various other
aspects
of
yes.
Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And for those people who are confused about the badge that John was wearing, it's the IDIC, the symbol of infinite diversity in infinite combinations, in many ways underpinned by the philosophy of cultural connections. Ola Oganyemi, welcome again to a programme which we put together a few months ago now, and seems to be thriving in so many ways. So great material there, because we said we would actually go and do this, and the heck with the consequences. How has the last year teaching-wise and research-wise been for your good self?
Well, it's been wonderful. It's been amazing since we started this CC. Programming and the kind of enthusiasm and support that we've got from both students and staff, and then people have been coming back to say, oh, it's great to know more about people that we work with, that we normally don't talk about certain issues together, you know, their, you know, kind of likes and in terms of music preferences and things like that, and their background as well. So it's quite a unique opportunity to have this kind of platform to talk beyond our day-to-day activities. Now, in terms of, you know, pedagogy, I think the landscape is changing, you know, drastically. You know, in fact, you know, there was a time I was looking up to myself and said, when was the last time I used a whiteboard? You know, in those days, you have to carry all the pens and things.
Or indeed an overhead projector.
Exactly. You know, it's amazing.
Or a Bander paper, which we actually, it's going far too
You know, so you have to go back to many. But now, you know, everything is fast-paced. You know, it's, you know, technology-driven. You know, you kind of connect. Students come in with their iPad or phone, and you are not even worried that they are looking, you know, iPad, because you know that's part of the learning environment. You have to incorporate that into your teaching anyway, otherwise, you know, you lose them. So yeah, I think you know, we need to continue to transform and move with the time, and then make sure that you know, what we understand by knowledge, I think, has shifted as well. The notion of knowledge, what is knowledge today?
Well, the old polysyllabic term that frequently was trotted out back in my day was epistemology, the theory of knowledge. And although that's still there, given artificial intelligence and impacts that that has with respect to us, I can actually confirm for the benefit of the listener that, as far as I'm aware, all three of our co-hosts today are indeed not AI representatives. I think it's fair to say, Kathy, you haven't been replaced by ChatGPT or whatever at this stage.
Yet.
I mean, as somebody who's obviously taught in different countries and taught English as a second language and so on, have you kind of embraced the technology? Has it been a case of you've noted that there's been a change here, or are the fundamentals still the same whether you're in Australia or Malta?
Not only did I embrace it, I ended up being I was a trainer for teachers on how to incorporate technology in the classroom. So, I'm a big fan of it. I think you, not just using technology, but also, well, the tech is important, but it's also the aspects that go a little bit further into it, like using social media. And I had a really great lesson where my favorite one was using Twitter, and they had to kind of like, have you ever live tweeted when a show has been on, where you kind of make comments as it's happening, and you know, that's how. So I made them do that, but with a TED Talk. And what was so cool was that the speaker of the TED Talk responded to my class. And this happened every time I changed the TED Talk. They would be so excited, be like, I'm so glad you're doing this. And the students got excited because it was like actually working. They didn't know that they could contact people like this. And just sharing the idea that, oh, we're all speaking English because it's just an easier language because more people speak it. But you know, it has tremendous benefits.
John, Director of School, or School Director of Teaching and Learning for the University of Lincoln, Lincoln School of Film, Media and Journalism. Within that, one of the things that we're charged with, obviously, is to think about innovative ways of teaching, ways in which we're developing that. We talk about different approaches to assessment, and again, many of us have sort of introduced presentations, aspects related to that. The days where you simply say it's a 3-hour exam and that's it, basically, at the end of the day, that's the end of that module thing. They've kind of gone, really. But I mean, is that something which, in a real sense, I mean, you've heard Kathy's sort of line there, you'd say, yeah, okay, let's run with this? Or are there dangers that are also intrinsic where you think, are you actually engaging sensibly with this, or are you simply actually checking your own Facebook messages or whatever?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I love that example. That's really interesting, using Twitter in that way. I think we do have to embrace new ways of working and learning and assessing. And I think, you know, there are ways to ensure that there's academic integrity and rigor, to use that very sort of old-fashioned word, in there as well. But I think, you know, if we stand still, we risk falling behind. And I think, you know, again, slightly with my sci-fi head on, I often think, you know, if I could open up a parallel universe where we didn't have the pandemic, where would we be right now in terms of the technology? Because the pandemic really, you know, obviously there's other aspects to it, but it pushed us into a circumstance where we were using technology far quicker than we were naturally evolving towards, in terms of, you know, I can remember only a mere few years ago, the huge worry over recording lectures, and now it's second nature because we've just had to do that and move forward. So I would love to know where we would be now had we not been pushed into that, because I do think we're really starting to see some innovations and new ways of being able to work. You know, the days of flying to another country for a meeting are, you know, it's a different world now, isn't it? But, you know, only a few years ago that seemed to be commonplace. So
depends how much of a carbon footprint you wish to make, really.
Oh, well, absolutely. And that's one of my hats indeed. I was never happy with that.
it's a big challenge. I mean, Ola, as a globe-trotting individual, I say, time in Moscow, time in Nigeria, time in Britain, and so on, have you noticed that sort of change, or do you think, yep, someday I will be replaced by a chatbot?
I doubt so. Well, but we cannot but recognize the power of technology, definitely. And that makes me to think sometimes when I, you know, present theory of communications to my students about technological determinism. Is it the technology that's actually driving development, or is it human people, you know, face that is doing that? But if you look at it, you know, I think it's mutual, you know, because before the coronavirus, okay, people were kind of skeptical about, oh, how far can you go with using technology to deliver, you know, information and learning. Then immediately the pandemic happened, everybody just kind of embraced it, and now it's become like, and why not? It's the point, you know. You know, it makes possible instead of a global classroom opportunity where you could be here and deliver, you know, lecture to, you know, people in India, you know, or in America or in Nigeria, all sort of things like that. And in as much as the, you know, the network is stable, because that's another problem that we need to deal with, you know, network reception is not equal everywhere. So once we get that one sorted, and I believe that in the next 3-4 years, we'll have almost kind of a threshold standard across the world where we know that we'll be able to reach the economy. And there are some unreached communities as well. There's also, we have to recognize digital inequalities, you know, because that's part of the Sustainable Development Goals, you know, 10 especially. How do you now bring people on board? Because we're going to leave a generation of people behind who cannot link into that. Look at what is happening in Nigeria. They say they want to become cashless. And suddenly, you know, they decide that 45% of population are unbanked, completely unbanked. And so how are they going to spend money, receive money? So I think the preparation has to start now, rather than suddenly people find themselves in this and it becomes a shock to the system. So that's what we need to do.
There are a whole range of things which we can probably follow on with respect to that. But maybe, John, it's time for your first choice of music, which will be Walk Unafraid by Michael Stipe's band, as I always like to refer to them, Rapid Eye Movement, or something completely different. Anyway, your thoughts about this, and is it a case of, well, if you've taught in further education, you need to have this as your theme tune just to get you through a wet Friday afternoon?
Yeah, it is. It's an anthem, isn't it? And I think the reason I selected this is it represents different parts of my my life. So as a gay man who wasn't always out in the use of the phrase, the vulnerable parts of this song used to really speak to me at that moment in time. But there's also a triumphant aspect to this and a celebratory aspect to this track as well, which is why it means a lot to me and has been in my life for, gosh, 20 something years now. So so it does, and it's very good at sort of taking you on a journey from feeling insecure to really being empowered through the music.
As the sun comes up, as the moon goes down, these happy notions creep around. It makes me think long ago I was brought into this life, a little lamb, a little lamb, courageous stumbling, fearless was my middle name, but somewhere there I lost my way. Addiction only makes it harder. How can I be what I want to be when all I want to do is strip away these stilled constraints and crush this charade, shred this sad masquerade.
Music, certainly something which echoes across the generations and across the decades. Speaking of language, Ola, how many languages do you actually speak? I mean, are you fluent in? Because we spent about some time in Russia, of course. So just share with us.
Yeah. Well, my indigenous language is actually Yoruba. You know, so, and then about maybe roughly about 40 million people speak Yoruba across West Africa, not just in Nigeria. So they spread and go to other countries in West Africa. So it's more like, you know, an accepted language. And it's, I would say it's easy to learn because most people, because Lagos is the commercial center of Nigeria, and that's where you find a large population of Yorubas. When people come from other regions of Nigeria, they come in there and learn Yoruba. I've not seen that happening with people going to maybe the northern part, eastern part, and learning the languages there. So Yoruba has become more like a unifier in a sense, you know, like, you know, for business purposes. Now, but then I got a scholarship, and the scholarship didn't take me to the UK, unfortunately, but it took me to Soviet Union. So, and I remember, you know, when I was about to go, my boss then said to me, he said, this is a unique opportunity. And I knew that that's going to be a big challenge because I was in my mid-20s, you know, going out. I wasn't a young person. You know, so, and I had to quickly learn, you know, Russian language. The beauty of it, because I never spoke it before I got there, the beauty of it is that when you are in that kind of environment where everybody is speaking that language around you, you know, you have less challenge, you know, in terms of picking it up and things. And then, of course, determination that, look, I'm here, I have to complete these studies and I have to get it because everything has to be delivered in that way. And, you know, in terms of examination, actually, it was my first experience of oral examination was in Russia. Which is quite interesting. We have been used to written exam. And so after the first year, I was saying to my professor, I said, why don't we do written? And said, what's the rationale that one is better than the other? And they said, no, you just... So you got used to just picking up and talking about it and arguing your point and things like that. So
maybe that's good for public.
Arasho. Arasho, that's it. Or Pashalusta. You know. So and then after doing all of that, you know, of course, you know, English is you know, language of, you know, of education in Nigeria. So definitely if you went through, you know, maybe primary, secondary school and university education in Nigeria, you have had to learn English. So I speak three languages.
You mentioned you were in Soviet, so presumably pre-1989?
Yes, I was there in 1986 and I left in 1995. So I saw the end of Soviet Union. It wasn't my fault, though.
You may say that now. I mean, you know, I've heard Mikhail Gorbachev had a completely different narrative when he was bringing in Glasnost and Perestroika to actually deal with the whole thing, openness and rebuilding.
He had good intentions, but you know, society is difficult to control and to, especially if people are being caged for a long time. You know, it's just like a bird is in a cage, and then you release the bird, it flies everywhere. So that's what, you know, Russian people and the wider Soviet, you know, people found themselves in that situation. That now they can speak their mind, they can travel anywhere they want to travel to, and things like that. And the government just lost control of the whole structure.
Obviously, there's a whole range of debates we can do about the current scenario with respect to, obviously, the current regime, but that's perhaps for another story. Just again, allowing for that, presumably you saw the onset of Boris Yeltsin as well in the Soviet Union.
Definitely, yes. When he was battling to take over the Russian state as it was in 1991, you know, there was of course barricades and armies were on the street, and you thought it's going to be chaotic. I went there because I did the joint degree in photojournalism and journalism. So I went out with my camera actually to take some pictures. But by the time I was getting close to Kremlin, I was kind of a bit fearful. I said, well, being a freelance and then doing that kind of job on your own, and you are kind of exposed to danger, you have to be very careful. I think looking about trauma-informed sort of thing. So I didn't go into the thick of it. But if I was an accredited press person, maybe I would have, you know, kind of be much more brave to do that. But I wrote a piece about it for the Guardian, Nigerian Guardian, you know, on the kind of something like that. So, and yes, and there we are.
And which city were you mostly based in whilst
I
you were
in Moscow.
You were in Moscow,
yes.
Kathy, talking about trauma there, and we'll return to our learning specialism and research area as well shortly, and diaspora. From your own experience, of course, relatively recently, you were over in Ukraine. You were assisting, obviously, with respect to some of the help and the fed into your research for your master's dissertation. From what Ola was saying there, because you've also got a mixture of languages with respect to Latin America, is it a case of, well, everybody speaks English, or did you break into Polish or Ukraine every so often?
Everybody does not speak English. I think the hardest lesson to learn that in was when we were crossing the Ukrainian border into Ukraine from Poland. And so first you have to cross through the Polish border, and that's fine and easy, easy enough. And then the only way you can get into Ukraine is, or at least the way we were going into Ukraine, is we were associated with an NGO. So we had to prove their name and things, and they didn't have it in the computer. And we are speaking to someone.
Did they actually say, you're not on the list, you're not getting in here?
I mean, perhaps in Ukrainian. The problem was, it was honestly, I think it was just a misspelling of something. We were trying to figure it out later, but we're already past curfew because curfew was 11 p.m. and it's past midnight. We waited 4 hours to get to this point, and we're there waiting for it. And our driver is Australian. I'm with another American, and we have Google Translate. We have every app you can imagine on our phones to just try to communicate what it is and what's going on. And they did not speak any, and I can't even rely on my other languages. Like I speak Spanish, I speak more Romance languages, I can even read French. Like there's plenty of things, but nothing correlates with it. And all I did to prepare for going to Ukraine was just learning very basic hello, goodbye, thank you, yes, no words, and that's it. And also, they're just as impressive because they typically speak 3 to 5 languages because they know Ukrainian and Russian and Polish and anything pretty much surrounding their borders, they speak the language most likely. So they're just as capable with languages, but it was truly a struggle for a good hour of trying to convince them that, no, we're like, check our truck, we have diapers, we have blankets, we have food, and we eventually were allowed to cross, but you know, it was the beginning of, oh no, how is this going to happen? And then that's very quickly I got a translator.
It's worth probably noting at this time the master's degree you did at the University of Lincoln was, of course.
Don't worry, University of Lincoln, I did not go to Ukraine under your permission. I went to Poland and I followed humanitarian aid starting from Lincoln, going to Poland, Warsaw specifically, to drop off about 30 tons of aid. And what I did after that, that was the whole project presentation, was documenting and following the humanitarian aid to Warsaw and then meeting with the refugees that were being relocated into the UK. So there were about 80 refugees and their pets as well. And it was a really happy and exciting day, very cool. But after they left and they were returning to the UK, I ended up staying, and then I crossed over to Ukraine.
As I recall, it was a particularly fun summer we had with respect to ethical approval forms for that one, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah. make sure to put those ethical forms ahead of time.
Very much so. And your final qualification, of course, with that MA is?
Oh, I am officially a Masters of Arts in Journalism, War, and International Human Rights.
Excellent. John, speaking of language, I mean, we all like to feel that we have a certain facility with respect to language, even if we're none of us overall controller about the way in which language works. But when we hear stories from both Ola and Kathy there, and also with our variety of students that we actually have, particularly with respect to film and television students with respect to Chinese students and cultures that part of you, it is a challenge. Sometimes we do take for granted the fact that we're blessed with having a facility as English as a first language. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, and it's something to be very mindful of, I think. And I'm very aware, and have become very aware over the years of teaching, that I speak in a very particular way that doesn't necessarily help people follow what I'm. I'm never far
from. You don't have subtitles for all your lectures.
I'm never far from a very flowery phrase. Let's put it that way. Sometimes that's difficult to to follow. So it's something that I've found over the years is that I have to be very
especially
mindful
when
of
that's deducted in terms of your sound, your recording on Panopto, and it reads as something completely alien to what you've actually said.
Oh yes, you've tapped into something there, Alex. Panopto failed on me twice on Monday. I lost two lectures. I'm furious with Panopto at this moment in time. But yes, I've discovered that when subtitles appear on my lectures, they are
quite bizarre,
quite alarming, and in one case could have been a lawsuit had I not had the facility to go in and correct them because they said something completely different to what I said. I don't know where it got that form of words from, but there we go.
Let's move back to Kathy again for your next piece of music, Kathy, which is La Vida Es Un Carnaval, unless I'm way off base here.
Correct.
Okay, life is a carnival.
Life is a carnival.
Are you sure about that, are you?
Yeah.
Okay, any reasons for this one?
Okay, so yeah, this was hard to when you ask for music, and I'm trying to think, okay, where do I come from? And so this is a classic song in Miami, Central America, sure, but like I cannot emphasize Miami because this is the famous, iconic Celia Cruz. And if you don't know who she is, please watch a video because like she changes her hair to every color and it's amazing. But this is what you are used to hearing on the way to work. It'll come up at any party, any quinceañera you've ever been invited to, this song will come on. There's a remix. There's hundreds of remixes of it. So I thought it's a classic, cute Celia Cruz song, and we love it.
Thank you. practican, para aquellos que usan las armas, para aquellos que nos contaminan, para aquellos que hacen la guerra, para aquellos que viven pecando, para aquellos que nos maltratan, para aquellos que nos contagian.
Cultural Connections on Siren Radio. We have Ola Oganyemi, John Rowlands, and Kathy Manso with us. Ola, turning to yourself, your research interests incorporate both diaspora and trauma, and in many ways you could say that they're not disconnected, because if you are literally forced for all sorts of reasons to leave your country, leave your homeland, etc., it's highly likely you might suffer some kind of trauma as well. But just talk us through some of the headlines in terms of the research that you're currently actively involved with.
Yeah, you really touched on my research journey there, because when you look at it, you know, for the past 20 years I've been known as a scholar of diaspora journalism, and then now I'm even much more globally known as a scholar of journalism, education, and trauma. And when you look at it, you know, there's a strict connection between them, a very strong one, in the sense that during my, you know, interactions with journalists in the diaspora, you know, and just, you know, just talking about their journalistic practices and things like that, sometimes they pause and talk to me about trauma that has happened to them in the course of their work and things that I've had. One journalist was saying that he was present because there was an incident in Nigeria in 1987, you know, when the editor of Newswatch, it was an investigative magazine, Dele Giwa was his name, when he was you know, trying to publish certain materials that the government of the day did not like, and a letter bomb was sent to him. You know, and this journalist that I was speaking to was sat across the table from him when he opened the letter bomb. So, of course, it had a very profound effect on this journalist. And he mentioned that in my interview with him, you know, something like that. So that started me thinking. So I came back to the uni because, you know, I went to London for that interview and got in touch with a clinical psychologist, a professor of clinical, and I said, look, this is a, what do we do? Say, oh, maybe we say, why that shall we find out more? So I contacted the National Union of Journalists. I said, look, do you have some journalists who are, oh, they say, oh, we've got about 12 journalists in Manchester. You know, they are from Iraq and Syria. We don't know what to do with them. I said, really? Okay, let's have some. So we brought them to the University of Lincoln for a workshop. And then they expressed all this thing. And then I can see that this is a big issue. And that as journalism educators, we haven't been paying attention to that area. In fact, I felt embarrassed myself that I've, you know, over the past 25 years, I've been teaching journalism students, never talked to them about self-preservation, trauma, all sort of things. So we are doing them a disservice to be kind of sending them to the war, more or less like a war front now, to go and report, and then without, you know, arming them with the tools that they need. So my first, you know, point of call was to say, okay, to what extent are we actually traumatizing our students in the classroom? Because sometimes we just think, oh, let's just show this video, let's just show that one, or show this picture. And when I raised that, you know, one of our colleagues, you know, actually came to me, an eminent professor, and said, oh, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because in my film, you know, production module, I showed a particular Hollywood film, popular and things like that, but there was a scene of you know, rape in it, and he just thought, no, students say after the something like that, one of the students actually came up and said, you should have mentioned to us that, look, this is happening, that I was quite, you know, traumatized by that. So we have to be much more conscious about, you know, trigger warnings and all sorts of things like that. So we did this study with our, you know, all the three levels, and then and, you know, the outcome of that was delivered at the World Journalism Education Congress, you know, conference in Paris in 2019, and that also opened up the discussion that the wider, scholars are now thinking, so this is quite an interesting area, shall we do more about it? And that led to the setup of Journalism Education and Trauma Research Group in 2020.
And of course, the University of Lincoln has had a bit of a solid history in terms of trauma, because I recall contributing to a piece that Catherine Redpath put together, I think, back in the day when we had a trauma session that was again designed to how that was actually being handled and it worked. I think it's sort of 2014, 2015, if memory serves. Difficult times, and certainly the T in PTSD is indeed stands for trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, and something we need to be sensitive of and clear with respect to its own aspects. Some people might say just coming into Lincoln can be traumatic or unusual or charming or incomprehensible. Kathy, I suspect, where do I begin might be the answer to your experiences since first heading over to the land of the Yellow Bellies and actually becoming part of this particular community. What have your kind of most bizarre things been as an American in Lincolnshire?
All the above. No, I'm joking. I think what still happens now, not as much, but I think because people are used to me, is I get a lot of surprise looks when I talk, and they're like, oh, I'm American. What are you doing here? It's a little bit less now, but I think how this
nice
always,
friendly response. Yeah. What are you doing
what
here?
What are you doing here? But they mean it like nicely. They're just like confused. Why aren't you in London? Mm. like why this place?
Because London's obviously so much more. You know.
Well, I think and this conversation always happens because it's my fault. I open it up because there's already miscommunication between like English and American greetings and sign off. So anytime you go to the register or the till and they ask you a question, but it's meant to be kind of like they say, you right? You all right? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And so my natural response is, I'm fine. How about you? How are you? And they're not ready for that. They're like, whoa.
Ah, the reciprocity argument.
Someone has asked me a question. And then that's where, so I think, I don't know if it's just because that's how I was raised. You know, if you're going to ask me, I'm going to ask you. That's just my natural response. And I don't mean to go into like a conversation, especially with like 10 people waiting in line. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'll go.
Usually the suffix duck is added, really. So are you okay, duck? You
know, yeah. Sort of full stop. A lot of ducks, a lot of loves. Yes. which very, very appreciated. But yeah, the accent gets confusing for a lot of people. And I mean, it's been welcomed and I've been, you know, only treated kindly. But I think it also confuses people. Like I've had people try to sell me things on the street or try to get me to go into a store. And the minute I open my mouth, they've completely lost their whole goal. And they're like, I have questions. Where are you from? And then if I say the right thing, they're like, wow, why are you here? And never-ending circle of conversation.
I didn't know Miami, Brayford, Miami. It's got a certain
it's kind of the same. Yeah, it's there's a waterfront.
Oh, look, I don't think we've really shared this opportunity with yourself. I mean, were there any moments from your own perspective when you first sort of joined the University of Lincoln you thought, how bizarre?
Actually, it's quite interesting because I lived in London for three years. You know, I did my postdoc at the London School of Economics, actually. And then got my first job at Egil University. Now, it used to be Egil College, University College, in Lancashire. So, and my remedy was to set up journalism program for them. They'd never done it before, so I went in there, and then we started. So 3 years into the job, going into the fourth year, I was embedding it then, and they were thinking of probably taking NCTJ accreditation and things like that. Then I saw the advertisement for Lincoln. And I was just looking at it, and I said, it was as if it was describing me. I thought, interesting. Maybe I just put it in just for interview experience. I've not been in interview for a few years. So I sent it in. I never thought about it until I got the letter of invitation. I was looking, where is Lincoln? And that was the first time actually
not Nebraska.
To me. Where's Lincoln? You know, and my wife was thinking already, say, oh, maybe we're going to move so far away again.
Nebraska.
So, and then I was looking at me. Back of my head, I would have said Lincoln is somewhere in Scotland. Mm. It just didn't.
Almost as bad as Nebraska.
So I looked in the map and I said, it's not far from London. And my wife was looking, really? So there's another place that is closer to London we could go to. You know, I said, well, let me go there and see. So, yeah, coming to Lincoln, that it was December 2021. And it was grey, you know.
2001, presumably.
2001.
I mean, time is an illusion. Time we know an this. And John could write a science fiction novella on it, yes, but, you exactly. know, ultimately.
2001, yeah.
Time has no meaning here, as Malcolm McDowell says in Star Trek Generations.
It's the fire in which we burn.
It is.
Or is it a companion that helps us on our way, as Jean-Luc Picard would say?
And it just felt like home to me, to be kind, you know, because I've lived in many countries, you know, and I've never felt at home anywhere apart from, you know, my place of birth. But Lincoln felt like home somehow, and in a strange way. And I said, if I was given the job, I would take it. Mm. And lo and behold, I was offered the job. I said, okay, fine. And my children also grew up here, you know, and they came as a young person, and then they grew. And many of them have found Lincoln home as well, you know. Mm. For my daughter, she's a lawyer, and she worked with CPS. And then when she went to Nottingham to study, and I thought, oh, she's going to stay in the big city. She came back to Lincoln and said, what are you going to be doing in Lincoln as a lawyer? But anyway, she managed herself and then got to CPA and still living in Lincoln, you know, even though our office is in Nottingham, you know. So it's kind of something like that. There's a little bit of attraction somehow that Lincoln has got. I think, you know, that should be celebrated, to be kind, you know.
Well, those of us who have been here for the last 30-odd years have appreciated that, although I was actually up in Hull for the opening part of that whole sequence at the University of Humberside. I must admit, I've always found it bizarre, the notion of Steep Hill being exactly what it says it is, steep and a hill, but that's by the by. John, what about yourself?
I think I had a quintessential Lincoln moment on a particular day a few years ago, where that very day we were welcoming a load of new colleagues to the school, and so I shared this with them, that if they wanted an idea of what it's like to teach and work in Lincoln, that very morning I found myself in the pouring rain with an umbrella, wafting a swan off the level crossing with a bag of coursework. And I thought, this is what it's like. This seems a very Lincoln specific scenario on all fronts.
Yeah, exactly. Also, the swans regularly actually need to have their particular parts to play in the whole system, especially cultural connections. It has almost brought us around to the end of this particular programme, but we've still got Uptown Funk to go out, which is Fleur East. Before we say our final farewells, what are your reasons for Fleur East, please, John?
It's the sort of bookend, the other bookend to Walk Unafraid, really. So I was in my youth was never as a nervous individual, was never someone who ever saw themselves attending a pride event, and indeed at that point in time was quite intimidated by the concept of going to a pride celebration. So flash forward to summer 2017, where I found myself in Madrid at World Pride, which was wonderful and amazing and totally excessive. just something, not my natural environment. I'm not a party person at all. You know,
I suspect you wouldn't be regularly going down to Miami on a standard basis, where it's all one long party, is it not?
Bienvenidos. Let's party. Let's hang out.
No, in fact, there was a character in Last of the Summer Wine once who said, what do you do for a hobby? And he went, oh, sit quietly. And I thought, oh, gosh, that's quite aspirational. I quite like that. So I found myself in one of the big squares in Madrid. Fleur East was playing, and she sang this song, and it just spoke to me in terms of, you know, a journey that I'd been on since my teenage years to where I found myself at that point.
Are we going to go out with it? Obviously, in a few moments from now, but this is the end of the latest edition of Cultural Connections, but only the beginning of the end for the Cultural Connections programme, because we'll be back again in a fortnight's time, of course, with more fabulous connections across the ether and so on. Cathy Manso, a good time for your good self?
A great time. Loved it.
Ola, quite happy with this production?
I have to say, spasiba bashoy. Thank you so much.
Das vidanya, obviously.
Esheun in Yoruba. Just thank you.
And John, enjoyed the whole experience of the last 3,600 seconds?
Absolutely, yes, it's flown by.
A bit like Uptown Funk, then.
Michelle, fight for that white coat. This one for them hood girls, them good girls, straight masterpiece. Stylin', wildin', living it up in the city. Got Chuck's on with Saint Laurent. Gotta kiss myself, I'm so pretty. I'm too hot, hot damn. Call the police and I'm fireman. I'm too hot, hot damn. Make a dragon wanna retire me.
Girls Hitch, hallelujah. Woo! Girls Hitch, hallelujah.